You are listening to Katie and Kay. This is Raleigh Burley introducing our newest show here on Katie and Kay. I'm here with Megan Tackett and William Grambois.
Howdy.
Hey, hey.
Howdy to you, sir. So what is the name for this show?
Everything Under the Sun.
Everything Under the Sun. And the premise is to essentially talk about our weekly newspaper, the Sopra Sun, and to give you two an opportunity to talk about your work and to go more into detail about certain stories that you've written about, as well as to eventually take callers.
Yep. We're hoping people will get involved and chat with us about what we're doing, and hopefully there's some engagement out there. And eventually it may be me running the board, in which case you can, you know, when I jump the gun on the mics or something, you can you know where to send the complaint.
Yes, and I'll receive any complaints for any accidents that may or may not have occurred today. So I think that we should jump in with the cover story about CRMS receiving these wild horses, adopting them from the BLM land. This is a story that you wrote about.
It's actually a story Jane wrote.
Oh, Jane.
We don't have Jane in to discuss. So I'm afraid I don't know a whole lot more about it than's in the print edition there.
Give you an insider tip. Usually if there are cute animals on the cover, Jane is behind it.
That is fairly accurate, yes.
She is an expert of capturing photos of cute animals and children. This is very true. Jane, if you're out there and you want to call in and talk about your story, we would be happy to receive your call. Moving along, William Grambois, you wrote a few stories that came out of the trustee meeting on Tuesday. A couple of those, one was about proposed tax renewal that will be on the ballot in April, and as well as them receiving that snowmass drive so that they can begin work on creating a sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a fairly active meeting. I think they got off to a good start at the beginning of the year here. There was a little debate on that taxed item, as you mentioned, in that they've been looking for some time to put together a dedicated tax source or revenue source for capital improvements. And this isn't really that, but it could be. At the moment, it's a pretty mild mill levy. It will expire in 2020. They were looking at, okay, when are we going to go back to propose to renew this? We could go on the municipal ballot. We could go on the November ballot. They could even have gone into 2019. But the desire was this is an important enough tax that they didn't want to wait too long so that they could go back to the voters if for some reason it didn't go through. And so The first meeting of the year turned out to be kind of the deadline to make any changes that they wanted to if they were going to get it on the April ballot. And so while they discussed the possibility of increasing the levy so that they could put some of that aside for bigger projects in the future, the kind of final decision was just to stick with the basics, go to the voters and say, you know, this is something that we need, and we'll ask for the extra later. So that was kind of the big decision that was made. The Snowmass Drive trail, they've been calling it a trail, it's kind of more of a path. It looks to be about a 10-foot wide sidewalk in the end that will accommodate both bikes and pedestrians. That was to some extent already decided. They'd been working on an intergovernmental agreement with Garfield County because it's actually not in town between Sopras Avenue and Main Street. So in order to get it built, they worked with the county. At some point, there's an assumption that they're going to probably annex that. In fact, it's part of the agreement, and the town will be maintaining it regardless, and they also agreed to plow up White Hill in part of the agreement as well. The sort of tricky part in the whole equation is that trailer park, which from our spot here at the studio is just right behind us, is not in town either. And so if they get into annexation, they either have to annex that trailer park, which means it needs to be up to code, or they'll be creating sort of a county island inside town, which is less than ideal. So that could be an interesting topic going forward. Even after the trail itself gets built, there's still some news there to be had.
And we saw a lot of letters from children who attend the Crystal River Elementary School in the Sopra Sun. And it was even mentioned at that meeting that those letters being received by the county commissioners of Garfield County was a big reason why, or at least part of the equation.
Yeah, it seems like they really brought the issue, which has kind of been simmering for a while, up in front of folks. Demonstrated just how important it was. They had an actual presentation to the trustees. They wrote numerous letters in groups and separately, and just made it clear that this is a basic safety issue. There's a school, actually two schools on Snowmass Drive that need good pedestrian access. You can't have I don't know if either of you have ever attempted to walk that section as it is now, but it's nerve-wracking. There's not really a great shoulder or a easy definition between the fence and the road and where you should be. And don't want to walk on the other side because it's a ditch, and it's kind of a problem. So having that little section, that's a fairly essential final link.
And an ongoing discussion that was also talked about, and you wrote about, was this common consumption change I hear for First Fridays in the summer, which may be news for some people who are listening. It's the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce that wants to create kind of an open container environment where you could walk around with a special cup and move between restaurants all along Main Street during First Fridays. And Gene Schilling had comments, as well as Marty, some reservations. I don't know what you observed.
Yeah, you know, I think that on some level, it's been surprising to a lot of people involved how open the board has been to the idea, because it was such a debate 20 years ago when we were putting in an open container law in Carbondale, and now it's sort of flipped, and they're looking at how do we make this particular event kind of exempt from that. Certainly not entirely. There's a lot of safety measures in place and restrictions that are coming down from the state in order to make this happen. It's looking like it'll be a pretty in-depth project to pull off well, and everybody on the board expressed at least willingness to continue having the conversation. Gene Schilling, our police chief, probably expressed the most significant reservations. Is also going to go, you know, do his best to deal with what's put in front of him. Marty and also Mayor Dan Richardson expressed less than complete enthusiasm in the whole process. But it seems like it's going to come down to the details to some extent. There are some major kinks that need to get worked through. Third Street is one of them, getting across that intersection, right, which is technically not in the controlled area. There's this requirement from the state that the cups be recyclable, which is very un-Carbondale and also difficult to sell somebody a plastic cup for $10 to wander between buildings. Also, you won't be able to move from the poorhouse with a full glass into Marble Distillery or into, Batch across the street. You do kind of have to, when you enter someplace that's serving alcohol, you have to have your cup empty. So it may encourage some of the galleries not to bother serving alcohol at all, because that'll just add to the overall complexity. So there's some challenges, but it seems like the crew working on it is dedicated to making it happen. And just so you know, so you don't start expecting this to happen in February, it's kind of a trial period for June, July, and August. And it would only be between, I think, 5 and 9 p.m. So you're not going to be out at 1 a.m. with your alcoholic beverage and not have the police questioning you on that subject.
Yeah, and one note on Third Street, it was pretty interesting to hear Ben talk about how there might be a shuttle person that would take your drink from one side of the street to the
We'll have to keep an eye on that person. They could be stealing sips or something.
Beverage mule.
Or potentially you have to finish your drink not only before you enter a place, but before you cross Third Street.
Which doesn't seem like the worst restriction in the world, you know. What this is allowing is an opportunity to not be tied to one place completely if you're choosing to imbibe during First Friday. You can be out in the street. If we're going to close the street, it seems like the attitude is, why are we keeping people in the bars when they might want to be out socializing with their friends right in front? It might not even require, I guess I don't have an image of people, you know, doing beer races down the middle of Main Street, but just hoping to have a little more flexibility in where they choose to be, particularly because it tends to get crowded in the bars on First Friday. So sitting out front or talking with a friend has a certain appeal.
And speaking of trustees, the 22nd is the deadline for people to file a petition if they'd like to possibly sit on the board and be in the April election. But very few people have come forward.
Yeah, only two people have pulled applications for four seats. It's a huge election this year because we've had several people appointed. So there's kind of everybody who's been appointed has to run, plus Mayor Dan Richardson's seat is up. There has been one application pulled for that position. Presumably Dan himself will be looking into whether the incumbents are planning to run. There is a little time left. You know, when I talked to Kathy Derby, our town clerk, she expressed a sense that people are going to get in last minute. So this isn't a panic moment, you know, oh, we don't have all the seats filled. You know, it's worth thinking about. It's worth considering that not only do we not want to get in a position where we're going to we're not having an election and we don't even have somebody to fill each seat, we don't want to get into a position where, you know, there's not some public process here. We'd like to have the voters have a chance to choose between folks. We'd like to have people wanting to step up and serve the community and make some of the big decisions. It's probably not going to be anybody here because we all have that media conflict of interest, but we'd like to, I guess, encourage people to give it some thought and take out an application if they're thinking about it.
So we can cover it as well.
Yeah, there's that. You know, there's a benefit to us if you guys decide to make it a race, but also a benefit to the community.
Yes, creating change at the local level is probably the most we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. We make a lot of, there's a lot of concerns politically on both sides of the spectrum, and one of the most immediate ways you can have an influence on your life and the people around you is to get involved in local government and not expect everything to happen at the federal level.
Well, so Megan, you had a great article about the first week's trial kind of phase of this happening. Could you speak to it?
Sure. It was actually, by that time, it was day five of the trial, and it was kind of a dramatic day. One of the double-edged swords of being on a weekly, I guess, is when you have something like this that's ongoing and breaking news, you know, I can dive in a little bit, but already, you know, as we went to press this morning, I'm reading in the PI what happened that I couldn't report on, you know, so there is that. But it was kind of a dramatic case, really. So basically, you have two cousins, and Benjamin Weeks is the one standing on trial. He has pleaded not guilty. His cousin, Nick Amaral, is a Carbondale local, as mom's been here for decades. And I'm not sure of the timeline. I'm very interested to hear in the sentencing how this all plays out, because Weeks is a California resident. And then he's actually, once he's finished sentencing here, he's going to be extradited to Las Vegas, where he's a prime suspect for a first-degree murder. A 27-year-old woman was found in her apartment in Las Vegas in January, a month before the Valero holdup, the robbery that he's on trial for right now with his cousin. So he's going to be extradited to Las Vegas, where he's going to face those charges. So I'm curious to learn exactly how we go from California to Vegas to here. Mm-hmm. But he and his cousin, allegedly, his cousin is already facing 6 years prison time for a plea deal. And Weeks is on trial. And it was an interesting day because that was the day that prosecution really called a lot of their prime witnesses. We heard from several of the deputies and undersheriffs that were on the case during a 2-day manhunt, for instance. So chronology timetable, in mid-February on the 16th, Nick Amrell and allegedly his cousin Ben Weeks went into the Cowan Center and at gunpoint held up and robbed the Valero gas station. Then subsequently, they go up to Snowmass and stay with one of Nick's friends in Snowmass, who completely unbeknownst to said friend, he had no idea, apparently, according to his testimony, that, you know, the Amrell and Weeks were wanted and that there were warrants for arrest. When he found out via Facebook article in the morning, he kicked them out. According to his testimony, you know, the men didn't deny anything. They were gone out of his apartment within 15 minutes. They hop on the Snowmass bus down to the intercept lot. They get a transfer. And then on the Down Valley bus to Basalt, Colin O'Farrell was the driver that day, and he gets a phone call on his personal cell, which never happens. He says he was terrified that, you know, maybe, oh my gosh, is my son sick in the hospital or something, because that's how irregular protocol that is. But he gets this cell phone call, and the police are like, hey, look, we're trying to get police organized. You've got two criminal suspects on your bus right now. You know, ignore any stops. We're going to pull you over eventually. And when that happened, there were some other passengers that kind of freaked out, frankly, when they got pulled over. And next thing you know, Amrell and Weeks jumped out of the window exit out of the back of the bus near Holland Hills area and spent the night exposed to the elements. There were drones. There was a canine unit. There were multiple police departments involved. And yet, you know, they were never found until that next night. And that's largely thanks to Nick's mom, Alicia Jackson. She was terrified. And, you know, you're a local at home and the police come to your house and show you a photograph of your son in a robbery at the gas station down the road. So, you know, Weeks turned off his cell phone, but she was able to make some connection with her son. And it really largely, from what I gathered from the testimony, it was largely thanks to Jackson and her cooperation with the police that she was able to convince her son to turn themselves in eventually. So that's essentially what happened there. And, you know, there was a lot that came out of that, realistically, you know. Jackson exposed a lot of fear, really, in all of that, because, and she said this outright, this isn't me editorializing, she said she spoke with Undersheriff Ryan specifically about, you know, these are two black boys in the woods at night up the frying pan, and what happens if, you know, police show up in the middle of the night and they come out of the woods. And, you know, she really took pains to make sure that this was going to be a peaceful solution. At the end of the day, she was just a mom terrified that her son was going to get shot that night, was what she told me outside the courtroom. So, you know, my heart went out to her in that regard. But it was an interesting case. You know, prosecution rested its case. Weeks decided not to testify in his own defense. So at this point, it really is going to be turned over to the jury, and we'll find out sentencing next week.
Wow. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is a new show on KDNK with the Silver Sun staff. We've got editor William Grambois and Megan Tackett, the reporter.
Yeah, I just want to interject. There have been a couple of references to sentencing. We're not there yet. We actually do need a verdict from the jury. Amaral has pled, but
yes.
Weeks is still in the process.
Yes,
so,
prosecution has rested its case, and at this point, it's going to be handed over to the jury, and we should have a story for that next week with a verdict.
Right. We're hoping to keep an eye on a verdict, but so the extradition will take place regardless, presumably of the verdict here. But sentencing is up for grabs depending on the verdict there. So just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Will. The show is called Under the Sun. So we're going over some of the highlights from the paper of this week, and you can look forward to this show every Thursday at 4 o'clock. Eventually we'll be handing it completely over to the folks from the Sun. And just kind of wanted to talk briefly before we dive into more stories about 2018 and the Soper Sun. Will, this will be a big year for you, I think, as an editor. Now you're comfortable in the seat and you can come up with some good decisions. And do you have any directions where you want to take the paper, anything you want to bring out from the community?
You know, at this point, it's you're right. It's nice to get had a year under my belt to get comfortable and to make some mild changes and sort of see how things stuck. I did have a column a couple weeks ago talking about all the things that we'd accomplished in 2017. We're getting settled right now. We're looking, we have a new board president who will be, eagle-eyed person folks might have seen on the masthead, but we'll be talking about a little more in upcoming weeks. We have a new ad salesperson who's supposed to be starting soon. We're making that transition. So once we have that settled, you'll see Classic Movie Night coming up next month. You'll see hopefully more partnerships with Kitty and Kay, like the one we're starting on right here. We're working on just, you know, it's January. It's a quiet time of year in terms of stories. So, well, except for this week, it seemed like it was a big week. We're hoping to dive a little deeper into some of the issues that are going on in this town. I hope you'll like what we're up to. I keep putting this word out because I get people telling me, you know, your opinion pieces are all from the left. Well, we could use somebody who's a good, cogent, conservative columnist. And we could use folks from the right to send us letters. We want to be a dialogue, not a monologue.
Oh, and just to add to that, I am personally very excited. This former creative agency type person is excited about our new website that should be coming out. We've got a new board president, so there's a lot going on. I'm excited, and I'm excited to get to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So
awesome. Yeah, I think this is a great collaboration between Katie and Kay and the Soper Sun. Everything under the sun, it's great. So moving on with these stories, Fire Chief Ron Leach is retiring.
That's the rumor.
You wrote this story. Would you like to talk about it, Will?
Yeah. So last night, actually after press deadline, so, you know, been a few developments since then, Ron was presented with a separation agreement that gives him the opportunity to leave with about $98,000 and 13 months of health insurance, which apparently he would not be guaranteed. He doesn't have a standard retirement plan. There was some mix up back in the day when they added retirement plans. It's not that surprising. You know, Ron has been the chief there for pushing 40 years. I understand he might have taken a year off here or there, but this is a guy who goes back to the 70s and has built this from a little volunteer fire department into what it is today. So that history is not insignificant, and the amount of change that the department has seen is hard to overstate. You know, but when he was starting out, there was a siren out there by the near new that summoned all the firefighters to their posts. I believe it was a pretty much an all volunteer department back then. So, it's a big moment. It really is. And Ron has, about a month, to sign that piece of paper. And once he does, it'll be a week, when he can revoke that decision. As soon as that goes into effect, the deputy chief, Rob Goodwin, will take over as an interim chief. There will still be a process to choose a permanent selection, but it's pretty cool also that we have Rob in the in sort of the co-pilot position and ready to take the reins, because there's another person with just an immense amount of history in this town. He was he's a local and native. He was on the championship state football team for the Rams back in the day. He's got a really good sense of what this place is, and he's been at the department a good time himself. So it's not, it's easy to get sentimental or fear that losing Ron means losing all that institutional knowledge. But we've got a great team from the top to the bottom, and it seems like the fire department is well poised to roll with the punches and keep moving forward. And Ron is planning to stick around, volunteer a bit up in Marble, and hopefully you'll be hearing a little bit more from him. I'm hoping to sit down with him and get some of the stories he's experienced over the years, because there have been big ones. You know, they're the obvious ones like the mine disaster and the South Canyon fire, but there's also some really interesting averted disasters like the Mossberger bulk plant over here by the town hall that really could have taken out about half a town if the response hadn't been as quick as it was. So I'm hoping he'll be willing to share some of that with us, and you'll be reading that in future issues.
Well, there's a lot to look forward to in coming weeks with the Sopra Sun. These changes, these stories as they develop. Thank you both so much for coming in and for sharing your knowledge of everything that's going on with us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Reminder, this will be a call-in show. So in the future, when you hear this program at 4 o'clock, you can call in with your own questions for Will and Megan.
Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.